call the Committee on Business, Industry, and Jobs to order. We're going to hear about the Recovery and Reinvestment Act, the stimulus package. I think actually the whole agenda of the package, I believe, on the broader scale would have something to do with this committee, jobs, economic development, and industry and what have you. But so we're going to try to get a quick or an overview on most of the bill. And then in particular, there's things like extension of emergency unemployment benefits, health insurance assistance, employment training, things of that. A lot of this energy stuff that I think really, like I said earlier, I think most of this stuff has something to do with what we're doing here in this committee, but in particular a few of those things I just mentioned. So with that, we have Mr. And I believe this is the first committee that's really heard this. So we got on it right away and invited Mr. Hanson, Mr. McElroy, and they were very gracious on a very short notice to come to our committee and tell us what's going on. So welcome, Mr. Hanson. Did you want to come up first? And as you know, Mr. Hanson's been appointed by the governor, I don't know what the exact title is, but for lack of a better, the point person for the state. So, and you're happy to be here because it's not a tax or finance committee, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, I was telling Mr. Chairman ahead of time that I actually get to come to a non-tax, non-finance related committee, and Senator Bach isn't here yet, so I got by with
we just put a comment. Sent the National Guard to find him. So, and Murphy, too. Senator Murphy's pretty good. But we do have, what, four or five committee chairs on this committee, which is...
We do.
I don't know what that means, but we also have Thomas. What were you doing there at that Lincoln thing?
Chairman, I was giving them a history lesson of the presidents of the United States.
You were given a lesson?
I was doing the lesson, yes. I could tell you lots of things you probably don't know, even though you are the president of the Senate. You know,
I'm sure you could. All right, now we're warmed up. Mr. Hanson, thank you for coming, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm going to provide you with an overview of the what we know so far about the federal stimulus bill and what Minnesota's response will be. I'm here in my capacity as the Commissioner of the Department of Management and Budget, but also as the federal stimulus coordinator that the governor appointed me to here a few weeks ago. And the fact that he appointed me presupposes and kind of gives you an idea of why or what process it will be. As the finance commissioner and the budgeter for our state, I can tell you that most of the big part of the money we're going to get from the federal government is coming through existing programs, existing funds, and existing agencies. That we abide by our state constitution, which says we're supposed to get that reserves appropriating authority to the legislature. And it is our intent to have this assimilated into our budget and back to you so we can get it enacted as quickly as possible. So that's the first point I wanted to make today, that it is, from my perspective, a coordination effort, not a czar, not a director, not anything like that. We have agencies, and you'll hear from Commissioner McElroy in a minute, but we have agencies that are used to working with the types of federal assistance we are getting. Now, granted, it's coming quicker, faster, and more than we're used to, but, you know, MnDOT, DHS, Indeed, kind of the big three, are used, and the Department of Education are all used to getting federal funds and managing it. So it is we look at it as a cooperative effort on our part that will take a couple of forms. We have been working, Mr. Chairman, for about the last month as the federal stimulus bill has taken shape at the federal level to try and identify those barriers or those administrative barriers or those statutory barriers that we might have here in our state that will prevent us from getting the money out quickly or meeting whatever kind of deadline there is. So the agency.
Are we going to need some statute? Are we going to need some language then to help you in that area? Or
We will have to. I'm a little more. I know we will probably, and I see that. I don't think Senator Murphy is here, but in order to meet the 120-day deadline to commit at least 50% of the funds in for the Department of Transportation, we're probably going to need to come forward with some statutory changes.
Just sometime in that area only, you think, so far?
But we'll probably, and Commissioner McElroy will get to it in his area.
Because get us that stuff right away, you know, so we can move all of that out, yes. to not impede any of your, excuse me for interrupting, but if you do need language, let's get her going. And,
well,
okay.
And it will, Mr. Chairman. We will, rather than waiting and figuring every piece out, every legislative or policy change we need to make in order to facilitate the movement of these funds, we may very well have to do it in segments as we, as it is figured out and for the sake of speed. So the first step will be to try to identify some of those areas that any changes we might need to make. We will follow it up with changes, renewed budget recommendations from the governor after the February forecast, where we will incorporate the federal stimulus money into the governor's recommendations, which we will report back to you in March. Now, the caveat with that is that there, you know, some of this money will arrive. We will be in receipt of in 2009. The extent to which we need to then move some of this money quickly to meet whatever deadline, some of those recommendations might come before the Senate and the House, before the overall budget. So it is a fluid time schedule, emphasizing speed on the front end and transparency, trying to get the information and the recommendations to you, Mr. Chairman, and committee members, and the rest of the Senate and the House as quickly as possible, so we can have our plenty of public notice. The way I look at segmenting the three kind of the three main areas of assistance we are getting is as follows. We're getting one big piece that is more directly related to our general fund, and that's kind of the first category, and that takes the form of the FMAP, the Federal Medical Assistance Program, and that's anywhere from about $1.8 to about $2 billion. And we still are trying to, as an aside, we're still trying to get a good handle on, I think about every other email I get has a different federal, it has a different number for whatever program. So we're still trying to, and I noticed the handout, Mr. Chairman, that you had today is different. Some of the numbers you have on there for Minnesota's piece is different than what we had. So my caution on just overall numbers, and the reason I'm going to be general, is we're trying to, we'll want to make sure that we get them right before we start throwing a lot of numbers around. And it doesn't help that the federal government is out today because of President's Day as well as state government. So we're probably delayed a little bit in getting you good, solid numbers. But back to my three pots of money. The first is the first pot is FMAP, about 1.8 to 2. And then the other piece of the kind of the first pot, which I categorize as that money which will directly flow to our general fund, is the state stabilization fund, of which the majority, 600-ish, or more, probably almost 700, will be will go to education, and then there's a more flexible piece of almost $200 million.
These are approximate numbers for the state, is that correct?
Yes.
Everybody's clear on that.
Yeah, these are approximate numbers for the state. So, for purposes of the general fund and our pending our budget deficit, you're looking at about a 2.6, 2.8 general fund bump in that first category of money to our general fund. The caveat that we're still trying to figure out, and I think we have a better sense at this point with the FMAP, is the requirements and the maintenance of effort requirements on the K-12 and in the education piece. So I know with, and I said at our commission meeting on Thursday, Mr. Chairman, that we probably, at least now we know, about $89 million or so of the governor's initial human services recommendations will probably have to be undone in order for us to receive the to meet the maintenance of effort requirements.
Everybody clear on that? That's good that the governor is, well, pretty much he should, revise that to get those.
Right, and that'll be with our budget after the.
Because we need our state effort to receive additional, and the governor.
Mr. Chair.
Was probably a little wrong in that one, but he didn't know either. I mean, for sure what those.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Michelle.
Just a brief kind of 20,000-foot question for the commissioner. Given the timing and the details that you're trying to wrap your hands around, do you assume then that the March 3rd forecast will be able to contain the information and the dollar impact of the stimulus package from the feds?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Michelle, yes. It is our intent. I assume the president will sign it tomorrow, and we will incorporate the those funds into particularly the FMAP and the stabilization funds into our forecast on March 3rd.
So, Mr. Chair, there's enough lead time for you
guys.
Yes,
there is.
I know there's an awful lot of work that goes into that. So.
And what we're hoping, Senator, is that the decline we are expecting in state revenues is below the increase we're getting in federal funds. That would make all of our lives just a little bit easier.
Okay. You don't mind if we...
Oh, any... Well, yeah, I'm just fine.
I think that's fine because when it comes up in your...
Yes, please. I'm flexible. But I was saying, Mr. Chairman, that I categorize it into, try to break it out into three main areas, three pots, three segments to think about it. This first one, FMAP and the education money, money we're used to receiving. We have procedures in place, will affect our general fund. Then you have what I call the in my second package, and it's all the other funds. Primarily it's the Trunk Highway Fund, it's the Clean Water Fund, it's the Drinking Water Fund, it's some of the funds that Commissioner McElroy will talk about in a minute. Some of these may leach into the general fund a little bit, but for the most part they're not, and they don't apply to the general fund or our deficit, but they're important in getting the assistance out.
Senator Bonnef, did you have a...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, as I understand it, with regard to the education funds, there is some talk that a portion of the funds will go directly to school districts and, initially right to school districts. Have you heard that? And then how do you, when you say it goes to the general fund, are these in addition to, or are you counting some of those funds as in your numbers of general fund?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonnef, I'm just counting the whole Minnesota share. I don't have, I'm meeting with MDE tomorrow, so I don't have the breakdown on how much comes to us, and we have the discretion to distribute versus how much flows directly to the school districts. The dilemma we might have with K-12 is if we had planned on using the K-12 shift that is in the governor's budget that we all have used at various times in the past, the K-12 shift has the effect of reducing the amount you're spending on K-12 within the current biennium.
Right.
So depending on how the language, and we had, I know that we and Senator Pogemiller's office had worked with Senator Klobuchar to try to make that more flexible. But you could see what we don't want is to have that counted against us on our maintenance of effort, in
yes.
which case, we may not be able to use the budget shift as a budget tool. That's one of the big things I'm trying to clarify right now.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, I really appreciate you being here, and I really appreciate you giving this clarity here, like the $89 million that needs to be rethought. And just from my understanding, I'm hoping that as you go through this, you do point out those kinds of things, because I suspect there's going to be quite a few changes with what we thought we had as a plan, and now what we need to do is modify it. And especially if, as we go through here, there might be some commitments that we have to make early, I would assume.
Yes.
Because if we do not get the budget finalized at the time, and you mentioned 50% committed in 120 days, that's going to put us in quite a time box here. So anything that you can do to let us know when this is a particular issue, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carlson, I said, and the chairman heard me say this at the fiscal planning and whatever commission it was from last Thursday, that when I identify something, you will hear about it right away. I won't sit on it for 3 weeks while I try to figure it out myself. And even in the case of that hearing, I heard of a problem I identified right in the hearing, right after hearing about it, and that was related to our budget reserve. So, yes, it's got to be a mutual cooperative effort and all of this. So I was back to my three baskets, and the second basket, all other funds, some of that might leach into the, some of that might have a general fund impact. Then the third category is the competitive grants category. And there's a number of competitive grants that the state, we as a state can compete for, a local unit of government compete for, nonprofits, schools, you or I. That's where I'm a little less clear of how to organize, but we're going to utilize the existing expertise in our agencies and assign agencies to work with that. To process
the time schedule on those competitive grants, is that a quick thing too? I mean, we really got to be on our toes on that
one. There is. I don't know the exact time schedule, but in the areas, it's I just wrote some down: health, information technology, broadband, green jobs, and then there's others, but some of them definitely apply to the jurisdiction of this committee.
But we've got to be at the dinner table soon, and
yes.
Getting our mashed potatoes in a hurry, you know. It's,
yes, sir. The guy down the hall is going to get them.
The guy down the hall is going to get your potatoes.
That's right.
So you figure we're all right in that area, and you get people. Okay. Well, we'll tune in on the competitive grants because that's.
Is anecdotal, Mr. Chairman, but last Thursday and Friday, two different days, I spent time talking to a New York Times reporter. And after talking with and viewing our process, watching the hearing we had on Thursday and discussing with myself, she says, quote, you guys seem to be a little far ahead of some of the other, or you guys are ahead of the other states in understanding this.
Well, that's encouraging. That's good. That's good. Senator Saltzman?
Some of the other states.
On this point, Mr. Chair, about being able to respond quickly, a couple weeks ago, when Congresswoman McCollum came into town, I think the day after the initial House vote was taken, she met with some legislators from the East Metro area, and Representative Mahoney was there with me. And we started to look at the proposal and saw many different areas, as you've noted at the time, were they competitive, but they had to do with economic development, research grants, facilities, and certainly some of that has changed. But after that meeting, I talked to Congresswoman McCollum and Representative Mahoney, and we talked about bringing together a larger group of people, and you just mentioned working within the agency. And as a result of our meeting, I talked to Dr. Mulcahy at the U of M, and he was having a meeting that afternoon with a number of people from the BioBusiness Alliance and the Destination 2025 group. And I said to them, you know, I'm not in charge of this program, but it would be great if you could start to identify who is a team of people across sectors, public, private people, because as you mentioned, these competitive grants could be applied for by a state, an agency, an individual, an organization. Let's get our act together and bring everyone together who represents these areas to see where we are best positioned. Than having one group say, well, we think we're best positioned, and really come together. And I think that's what we've talked about with these areas. And I have that list from Dr. Mulcahy, and it includes someone from Minsky, Gail O'Kane, Dr. Mulcahy, Todd Hulscheid from the high tech area, Dale Wallstrom, Eric Wieben from the Mayo Clinic, Bill Ulin from Small Business High Tech Manufacturing, Doug Cameron, Renewable Energy, Thomas Rybeck from Nano, Greg Whedon from Advanced Manufacturing, Bob Eldy, Bob Hare. So sort of like bringing people that's together excellent. To really have a think tank. And that's something that I'd be happy to share this with you, and I can forward the email. But that's, I think, what would be helpful for us is to look at this. How do we come together as a state and put our best proposals forward? Because I hear repeatedly that when we have these opportunities, we're not prepared to turn on a dime. And since I think we have some great things, and I really commend you.
Thank you.
For doing all that we've done, but let's even see if we can do even better. So if we can help in that regard, that would be great.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saltzman, I'd love to work with you on that. That's an excellent – that's the kind of coordination and cooperation we need to do.
That's good work, and I think you ought to grab that list and see how you can use those people.
From our perspective, it's – you know, we have some of our agencies that have the subject matter expertise or have the grants expertise. My agency, we don't distribute grants. We track the grants other agencies pass through or award. But from our perspective, you know, if it's green jobs or if it's, you know, we have, you know, Commissioner McElroy's agency that spends a lot of time with grants, but it has got to be, in order for us to be competitive with Wisconsin, Iowa, or Florida, or any other state, the kind of cooperation you outlined.
I think that you got to get your best and brightest, and if you're a good Senator Saltzman, that's good work if you could work with the commissioners. Senator Boniff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Saltzman brought up the very broad approach, and I appreciate that and agree with her. And then going back to just a specific request with regard to grants, I was looking at a bill on my desk this morning that I carried for the last couple of years that I haven't put forward this year because of I don't believe in putting forward bills that cost something significantly during these times. And then hearing you, I thought, well, maybe there is a place for it, and that is a bill that I put forward to fund interactive whiteboards for schools. And I worked with the High Tech Association to do a matching grant program, and I actually had the president of Quest come out and take a look at it. I had Comcast look at it, and they were very interested as well because the school districts, particularly in my district in the West Metro, that have used it have just seen dramatic results. But we haven't had the kind of resources to make it a statewide effort. And so I'm wondering if that might be something that would be a potential for this project. And if so, I mean, I assume we shouldn't submit these in bill form. So what might be an approach where I could explore that with you?
Highway stuff.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Boniff, that's a great question. I'll have to get back. I don't know in what form. It depends on – I haven't seen the language for the competitive grants piece yet.
Okay.
But that sounds like the type of thing that we'd want to pursue.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, all other funds and competitive grants, what were the numbers on those?
Oh, I didn't have the – we're figuring, you know, the number that we worked at my department was about $4 billion. The Medicaid fiscal stabilization piece was about 2.6 to 2.8. The highway piece of the second basket's about, I think, around 500 to 600. And the rest of that is that second basket, I guess, is a, so whatever, $4 billion minus 2.8, another 1.2, I guess.
What's the total of all of this money?
Well, I'm assuming, again, giving the cautionary note on the numbers, you know, we've identified, you know, from some of our sources in Washington of about $4 billion. I know I read in the paper on the Star Tribune they were identifying $9 billion. That, of course, is counts the tax impacts as well as, you know, money to locals that we're not perhaps going to see. They get up to $9 billion, but right now we're planning on about $4 billion.
So we don't get that $9 billion?
No, I actually have the I have the sheet by state, and some of this, you know, it goes page after page. It's
great.
The size of a placemat for your kitchen. So we're still trying to sort through it.
Okay. Proceed.
I guess at that point I will.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
open it.
Senator Tomasoni.
Chairman, Commissioner, let me try that again, though. So if the $9 billion is correct.
And you, I don't know if the $9 billion is correct.
Okay, but if it is, and you think that your 4.8 or whatever it is correct, then there's about four, a little more than four, what we think would be tax breaks to people on their paychecks. Is that what you're thinking? So that
I don't know where they got. Mr. Chairman, Senator, maybe Dan knows.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomasoni, for the record, my name is Dan McElroy. I'm Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development. We've been trying since that headline came out to get to that number, and so it might be interesting if someone from the Star Tribune could help us. But there are two other categories. One is the aid to individuals, and it comes in five parts. It includes the effect of the federal government taking over COBRA for unemployed people. We don't have an estimate yet as to what that comes to in Minnesota. There is the $400 and $800 tax reduction for individuals with an income below $75,000 and families below $150,000. There is a $250 per person credit for those eligible for Social Security, old age pension, disability income, federal railroad pension, and a variety of other federal programs. There is a very substantial increase in Pell Grants that will go to individuals, and that we think is excellent timing. That is an increase of $500 to the maximum grant, or $400 and something in the first year and $500 in the second year, and an increase in eligibility for Pell Grants. It's very exciting. There is also a very substantial increase in the HOPE tax credit for higher education. It's also very complicated. The newspapers tell you that it's a maximum grant of $2,500, which is 40% refundable, and that's true, but to get there, you know, it takes a worksheet, and so, but it's also exciting. There are also tax expenditures for business, some of which we think are good public policy. For example, an increase in the amount of capital investment that can be expensed in the year occurred. So a substantial portion of what the Star Tribune gets to, they get to from tax breaks that don't come through government but that go directly to both individuals and businesses. Some of them, like the COBRA extension, are massively important to those who are unemployed. They also make some assumption about competitive grants, most of which will not go to government. And Mr. Chairman, Senator Saltzman, I think our timing is excellent to compete because of the 2025 initiative, because of the Green Jobs Task Force, and because of the ultra broadband task force that are going on. We're ahead of competitors and the work that's been done in those emerging areas. And several of the provisions in the bill mandate that some percentage, in some cases large percentages, go to those areas of the economy. However, we can't keep the Amalgamated Acme Widget Company from applying for federal grants or individual nonprofits. So we can try and have team applications, but that doesn't mean we won't have some outliers.
So thank you, Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni.
Commissioner McElroy, so did you add up those numbers that you were just giving me, and did they come to the $4.2 billion that Commissioner can't account for?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomasoni, I think in all fairness to the Star Tribune, their number is an estimate, and in all fairness to the fact that this bill isn't signed until tomorrow, I don't know if they add up to that or not, but they're certainly, they have the potential. The best answer I can give you is maybe.
I've got the article in front of me, the $9.1 billion, and nowhere can I read in here how they get to that 9.1, unless those tax credits, the relief of $400 and $800 per couple and alternative minimum. Would that, you know, would that be as high as $4 or $5 billion? I doubt it. So that's the only thing I could see that would move that up, but that wouldn't get you there, would it? I don't think.
Mr. Chairman, there's also an additional federal extension for unemployment and a $25 per week increase in benefits. We haven't yet got the numbers as to what those come out to, or I don't anyway. We also, the COBRA is going to be significant. It's 65% of people's COBRA contribution for 9 months. So it is possible that those payments to individuals are sufficient to make up most of the other $4 billion or $4.2 billion, but there's also should be an allowance for competitive grants that aren't in the number that Commissioner Hansen used.
So it could conceivably, yeah, it could probably get up there.
Mr. Chairman, I just always assume that any billion we can't track finds its way to the range anyway, Senator.
Let's hope so.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's in keeping with the state motto, Le Toit du Nord.
Yeah. What are the $9.1 billion, one of the headlines is protections for taconite. So there you go.
That's the Buy American clause. That gets
I understand that.
Down,
right?
Yeah.
We went from flags to taconite. Okay, who wants to keep visiting? Where are you going, McElroy? We might not be done with you. Mr. Hansen, are you?
Well, I'm just going through my placemat. Well, Commissioner, I can, as I said, I've got page after page of different columns. I can, you know, getting to Senator Tomasoni's questions, I can read various numbers if you want to hear them.
You add them up?
Not added up on my sheet, so. I'm not Rain Man. I can't add all these numbers up in my head. So, but yeah. I can maybe even share this. I don't know how even, this was from last Friday. I don't even know how accurate it is yet today.
Well, this is probably just the first of, I don't think we're expecting everything to be exact here this afternoon, but after tomorrow when he signs the thing and we learn more and more about what's coming down, we'll get you back, but in the meantime, this has been a good discussion. Let's keep her going. Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Hansen, without having to add up anything, do we think that there are, you're good at arithmetic.
No,
I'm with you there. Do we think there are any numbers or amounts of funding that will be more than one time?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, so
it's money that's going to start arriving in the next month, and the funding stream will end probably at the, I think it's the end of 2010. So about the a year and a half into the 2010-11 biennium. So we'll only be able to book it in 9, 10, and 11 of our fiscal years. It's not any assistance that'll be available in 12 or 13.
And you can't backfill the reserves with this money either, can you?
You cannot.
Now that should be made clear to the members that we can't. Senator Bonnef, look like you're ready to say something.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's funny, I didn't raise my hand, but I was thinking of saying
I know you
something.
Were. I could tell. See, I could tell.
And just, you know, I think what Senator Michelle is, you know, in his way raising is the danger of using the money to balance the budget because it is one-time money. And so I think that none of the senators have any intention of doing that, and we're aware of the limitations of the money and the importance of having our budget and structural balance ongoing for the future and the long term. So I hope Senator Michelle understands that his colleagues understand that as well.
Yes. No, you don't. You want to talk? Go ahead. Do you understand that, Michelle?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Senator Bonnef. For understanding.
Follow up, Mr. Chair, if I might.
Yes, Senator Saltzman.
So on all these points, perhaps, Mr. Chair, and also Commissioner, when the forecast comes out, I understand that there's a process for that, but will it be noted how the forecast was changed because of the federal money that has been appropriated, hopefully is being appropriated as of tomorrow?
because I think that that's an important message for not only us but the public, because I have sensed as I have talked to different groups, trying to help the public understand how significant that the deficit and what it really means to the services we provide has been a challenge, because I think all of us are trying to understand that. So will there be able to be a note in the forecast so that it's very clear, had this money not come in, this is the deficit that we would be trying to address?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saltzman, a big focus of the forecast will be the federal stimulus and the money we received. We don't, the state does not provide alternate alternate projections.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you'd be able to see the story. The number will be specifically in there. We're getting $2 billion, and you'd be able to factor it in from there. But we don't do a whole nother forecast but for. People will be able to, you'll be able to easily see the decline in our income sales and corporate income tax, and then easily, probably right on the front page, see the federal money coming in and what it would be like if you just took the federal money out. I think it's a story you'll be able to tell.
So just to follow up, Mr. Chair.
Senator Saltzman.
Last spring, after we passed the Omnibus Transportation Finance Bill,
what's it called?
When MnDOT came out and announced the projects that were going to be able to be accelerated, they were very clear with the public of saying, and these projects would not have been able to be completed or started had we not passed this bill. So might I suggest it would be helpful, and even though it's not in the report, it might be helpful that we all are able to agree that whether it's not in the forecast report, that we all are very clear with the public and acknowledge that the deficit would have looked very different had we not had the federal money coming in. And I think that's just being honest with the public, and I don't think any of us should have a problem with that.
No,
but
I don't think so.
Just to help the public understand long term, what do we need to do here in Minnesota to have structural balance? So
okay.
Thank you.
Definitely.
So where would that transportation, would that be in that first pot of money?
Be the second.
Stuff?
It's another fund. Trunk Highway Fund is not
that's
general
in addition
fund.
To the three you were talking about?
Yeah, that would be in my second basket of funds, non-general fund.
I assume I know the answer. I suppose MnDOT must have half a dozen or a dozen recommendations that are shovel-ready that are...
They do, and I don't know if any... I can't imagine anybody from MnDOT's here, but... They've had to identify projects where they have the land bought up, and they're ready to get going and commit at least half the funds within the next 120 days.
Is it 120 or 90? Or is it 120?
I think it's 120.
Okay.
And they've, I think, already started to communicate with the transportation committees on some of their needs.
Okay. Any further questions of Mr. Hansen and or Mr. McElroy? Or we got a UI?
Mr. Chairman, I do have some other testimony and an exhibit I'd like to go through. And then Lee Nelson is here, and there's some significant opportunities in the unemployment insurance area if you have a few minutes.
Sure. anybody have any further questions of Mr. Hansen? He talked to me earlier, and he's got another place or two to go, so we'll probably let you go for today, and then we'll
Mr.
see what...
Mr. Chairman, please, as time permits, I know you're all very busy, but I'll come back anytime to update
you. You've been very, very cooperative, just in about a 48-hour notice, and
you're
here,
much.
And nice overview.
Thank you, Tom.
Mr. McElroy, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Dan McElroy, Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development. I want to talk about two things. First is the competitive grants that Senator Saltzman raised. They occur in many areas, but the areas in which we're going to be most aggressive are in the general area of job training and workforce development, and we'll work carefully and closely with our education partners from MNSCU and the University of Minnesota and others. Secondly, there is $7.2 billion in money for broadband, divided $4.7 billion going to the U.S. Department of Commerce for the National Telephone Infrastructure Account. There was an editorial on Friday in the Wall Street Journal saying what a challenge it's going to be to get that money out because that national agency only has 19 employees and has traditionally handled a very small annual appropriation. So we're hoping that they will consider allocating broadband money to the states or sub-allocating it. We'll work hard to go after that. We're incredibly well prepared in the area of broadband because of the Connect Minnesota project that was just completed and announced. It is interesting that in the Senate broadband proposal, all the money went to NTIA, which is believed to have a affiliation with traditional telephone and cable providers. In the final bill, it was divided approximately two-thirds to NTIA and approximately a third to the rural utility system under the Department of Agriculture, which we think is a good idea because of the potential for more innovative, collaborative regional approaches, and we look forward to working with them on that. Then third, there's a significant amount of money in what are being referred to as the Energy Green Jobs Cluster. We'll be working with the Department of Commerce to assist utilities, cooperatives, trade associations, and others, and state agencies in being as aggressive as possible. We have, because of the money that was appropriated to the Next Gen Act in the 2007 session, I think we're well ahead of other states. We have a Next Gen report. We did $3 million in what I would call seed corn grants to get some projects underway. We have five projects that didn't get Next Gen grants but are in fairly far into the development stage, so I'm quite excited about the potential for those competitive grants. I feel about these grants that they are an opportunity, and it's up to us to do everything humanly possible to maximize the amount of jobs that are created in Minnesota. The other category of funds are additional funds for existing programs. And Mr. Chairman, we provided a spreadsheet that looks like this. It says at the top, anticipated Minnesota allocation. I want to make clear that this was done on Friday. There's a lot of analysis that has happened since then, but these are our best estimates based on the data that was available on Friday. The bill is not yet signed into law, so if we come in a few weeks with a final allocation and it's different than that, that's to be expected. It will be different as we get more information. But as Commissioner Hansen indicated, a fairly significant portion of the resources and tools provided in the American Economic Recovery and Reinvestment Act, which is being talked about in Washington with the acronym ARRA, A-R-R-A, are additional funds in existing programs. And DEED, as you know, has a mission of assisting individuals, businesses, and communities achieve prosperity. So I want to talk about this in those terms. At the top of the spreadsheet is money through the Workforce Investment Act. We will receive approximately $20 million under the Workforce Investment Act, divided as $5.462 million in the adult program and $14.5 million in the youth program. This money is allocated 10% for statewide, 5% for statewide administration, 10% for statewide flexible funding, and 15% allocated by formula to the workforce service areas. The Department of Labor is obligated under the bill to distribute to the states within 30 days. We're hoping they may beat that. We'll be able to allocate formula money to the WSAs very, very quickly, within a few days after the federal allocation reaches us. WIA money can be used for services to adults, for some job training, and for core services in our workforce centers. This program, this youth money, is allocated heavily toward summer jobs, although we'll also try and use some for year-round jobs. And there's a provision under, in the past, WIA youth was limited to young people up to age 21. There's a provision in ARRA extending that to 24, which we think is good public policy. There is also...
Mr. Chair?
Senator Bonner?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner McElroy, for example, our youth core program that we do, where the youth in the summer go out to the parks and do that, would that be a candidate for this money?
Mr. Chairman, McElroy. Senator Bonhoff, that will be up to the Hennepin County WIB, the Workforce Investment Board. There are some fairly strict rules that apply to income and family situation that apply to federal WIA youth, but the money will go to formula to the workforce service areas, and so Hennepin County would make that decision.
Mr. Chairman, and that particular program is for at-risk youth, and so if they decided to use this money and the state legislature in our base budgeting normally fund that program, then that would be a reduction in what we would in our budget that we might not now know.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonhoff, I'm not aware of the maintenance of effort. I believe that that program is not funded through deed, but through the Department of Education. I'm rather sure it's not a deed pass-through. And so I don't know if there's a maintenance of effort requirement or not. We certainly will find out.
Thank you.
That's pretty important, yeah. Mr. McElroy.
Mr. Chairman, there is almost $11 million in money for the dislocated workers, federally funded dislocated workers program. It is spent 60% allocated by formula to the WSAs, 10% flexible money that could go either to the WSAs or to large layoff, what we call the rapid response program, and 5% for administration. We anticipate that we can get the WSA money of this allocation out quite quickly. It is one-time money, and it needs to be spent in about 18 months, as Commissioner Hansen indicated. Vocational rehabilitation and state services for the blind we estimate $8.1 million to provide additional services with an emphasis on getting people back to work or to work in some cases for the first time. Wagner-Peiser, and I apologize for using the federal kind of buzzword, is the federal funding for job service assistance that is provided in workforce service areas. Under law, it's provided by state employees, so it will enable us, at least on a temporary basis, to have additional state employees in the resource rooms. Anticipating this, we have added 15 resource room staff that start in the next week or so. We will be able to add some additional staff thereafter, but they will be on a temporary basis because this is one-time money. This may, at the discretion of, I haven't talked to the governor about it, but we had asked for $6 million, $3 million each year from the Workforce Development Fund to do this work. This will likely make that request unnecessary. Youth Build is a national program, and this is a competitive grant program, and we'll be working with the Youth Build group to apply. The Minnesota has one of the better Youth Build programs in the country, so I'm hopeful we will get a disproportionate percentage share of this allocation. NEG is the acronym for National Emergency Grants. Minnesota has a large national emergency grant application already pending. And I'd like to claim that we were prescient and knew this money would be in the bill. We did not. We simply thought we had an emergency as it related to the automotive-related industry for parts suppliers like Springfield screen printing or TRW in Winona, and for those laid off from auto dealers like the Hecker Group. And so we are likely to have a number of other national emergency grants in other industries that our staff is already working on. National emergency grants are granted in two circumstances where industries are particularly hard hit or in the event of natural disasters. We got a national emergency grant for the flooding in southeastern Minnesota in August of 2007. TAA is the acronym for the Trade Adjustment Account. There isn't any additional money in the bill for them, but it does expand the eligibility of TAA to service industries so that if people in a software company, mortgage finance, a variety of others are impacted by work being outsourced offshore, they can be eligible for assistance for job training and extended some other extended benefits under the TAA. Community service and employment for older workers. We have a couple of programs in Minnesota, senior options and experience works. this will be some additional funding for those resources to help seniors get jobs, often with nonprofits or in public service. IL is the acronym for Independent Living, and this is for the State Independent Living Program. In the Centers for Independent Living, we have 8 not-for-profit centers across the state that assist people in staying in their homes. They reduce the cost of health care. They're outstanding programs, and we're pleased to get additional resources for them. The Older Blind SSB is from a separate program from Voc Rehab, but assists older Minnesotans who suffer from vision loss or vision impairments to remain independent. Those are the financial programs that help individuals. As I mentioned, there are also a number of tax and policy items that assist individuals. One that we're particularly excited about is an extension of the Work Opportunity Tax Credit that provides a $2,400 tax credit to employers who employ those who've had difficulty getting work. And it was extended to cover virtually all veterans and a category of youth that were not previously covered. So and appears to extend the effectiveness of the WOTC. It was scheduled to sunset in 2011. We're still working on that sunset date. There are a variety of other policy improvements in the bill that we think are useful. But let me go on to building and community developments. There are a couple of provisions that are competitive, and yet the language in the bill leads us to believe that they will be allocated to some extent regionally. There is $100 million nationally for brownfield cleanup, brownfield being contaminated previously used land. And then in addition to the community development block grant of $1 billion, Minnesota typically gets about 2% of a CDBG allocation. So I'm hopeful that we can compete for in the range of $20 million from this program. That usually goes about two-thirds to entitlement communities like Minneapolis, St. Paul, Hennepin County, Dakota County, St. Louis County, and Stearns County, and the balance into a pool for small cities that our agency administers in the Small Cities Economic Development Grant Program. In the area of unemployment insurance, the Act refers to it as UI modernization. That doesn't apply very well to Minnesota. We've already done the modernizing, particularly of the system. There are some benefit issues that we'll need to bring to you, and there's a law change required to comply with this provision of the Act regarding our eligibility period, and we'll bring those to you in a few weeks in some detail.
That's the UI stuff?
That's the UI stuff.
Okay.
And it's, Mr. Chairman, the eligibility qualification period that you carried is just slightly out of conformance with the federal rules, and we require a modification. We're working on a couple of options to meet the federal requirement. But the good news for the program in general, but particularly for workers, there are a slew of provisions here that help workers. The one that may get the most attention is the COBRA provision. And I am concerned that we make very clear what the dates are in the federal act. This applies to workers who lost their jobs through no fault of their own, became unemployed since September 1, 2008. It does not apply to people who became unemployed prior to that. And it is valid through people who may lose their job through December of 2009. And it will assist by reimbursing them for 65% of the cost of a COBRA extension. We do not yet have the mechanism identified by the Department of Labor as to how they will be reimbursed. I can't tell you how soon we can start. We will know that as we get more information from the Department of Labor. There is also an additional benefit of $25 per week. It will take us, I'm rather proud of the fact the IRS is saying it will take them 5 months to get out new withholding tables. We're going to have this programmed and ready within 5 weeks. It will be retroactive to the effective date, which we think is next Sunday, the 23rd or 4th, whatever that is, 23rd. But the first week people would get paid for 4 or 5 weeks and then $25 a week thereafter. Mr. Chairman, there is one controversial provision in this $25. We can't do anything about it, but I know it will upset some people, and that is that this $25 is not subject to withholding for child support or for anything else. It is a straight $25 and gets without any withholding. There is also a provision to make the first $2,400 of unemployment starting in tax year 2009 exempt from federal income tax, which we, to the best of our knowledge, that's the first time that that's happened. There is also an extension of the effective date of the benefits.
Senator Tomasoni.
Right to that point, is it from this point forward or all of 2009?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomasoni, the law reads, starting in tax year 2009, which we anticipate as being the entire year. Now, the IRS will still have to write the forms and things, but I can quote the law that says beginning in tax year 2009, end quote. I am hesitant to anticipate how the IRS will interpret anything. But I think that's fairly clear that it should be for the whole tax year. There is also, Mr. Chairman, an extension of the effective date of the federal benefits extension. It was, up until now, it had expired March 31st, 2009. It now is good through December 31st, 2009, and provides an extension of up to 33 weeks for those who meet the federal requirements. And you will recall that requires having wages in the qualifying period of 40 times a weekly benefit. So that was the importance of the state-funded extension that you passed. There also is an appropriation of $130.1 million to the state trust fund. Under current conditions, the trust fund began this year with just under $500 million. We have projected that the trust fund would run into deficit and have to borrow from the federal government later this year or early next year. With this infusion of money from the federal trust fund, that will delay the period in which we go into deficit, and we will be reprojecting, doing a new projection of when that would occur. There is also a provision in the bill that cancels interest payments on loans from the federal trust fund for 2009 and 2010. So we had anticipated owing interest, fairly significant amount of interest starting in the first quarter of 10, well, actually starting in the fall of 10 because the interest doesn't kick in until October. But this is good news. I think that covers most of the unemployment insurance provisions. There also, Mr. Chairman, are a number of provisions involving the Public Facilities Authority, and Terry Coleman is here with the PFA. But why don't I take questions on the other issues I've raised, and then we can bring Terry up to talk about the Public Facilities Authority.
Any questions of the committee? Mr. McElroy?
Sure.
Senator Tomasoni?
Sure. Was most of this, would we consider most of this to be general fund or non-general fund? I suppose the unemployment's not general fund.
Mr. Chairman, none of this is in the general fund. It is in federal program funds for most things, and then in the unemployment trust fund for the UI programs.
And would, Mr. Chairman,
Member Sonny,
does this affect our general fund deficit in any way?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomasoni, not directly. If we are able to get people back to work faster and they start paying taxes, that helps. If we're able to help companies be more profitable or be profitable, that helps. But I haven't been able to. There is one impact on the governor's budget, and that was to the Workforce Development Fund for the $3 million and $3 million that we'd asked for work resource rooms. Other than that, I can't think of any impact on the general fund.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, if we could ask Mr. Coleman to come up and talk about the Public Facilities Authority.
Good afternoon.
For the record, my name is Terry Coleman, Executive Director of the Minnesota Public Facilities Authority. There's really two pots of money in the bill for the PFA, and they go to the revolving loan funds for clean water and drinking water. Roughly $72 million, maybe a little less, going into the clean water, and right around $35 million going into drinking water. The need for wastewater is much greater than it is for drinking water. We may be looking at, historically, we're allowed to transfer some funds out of drinking water into clean water and vice versa. We may seek approval to do that, and that all that requires is board action, and the governor is okay to do that. And the demand is definitely there in clean water. The bill is going to require, for us to spend this money, we're going to require legislation. It's real simple. Half the money in both these counts need to go out as grants or principal forgiveness, and our revolving loan funds are set up to make loans, not grants. We've got a variety of state programs that provide supplemental assistance in the form of grants. We plan on using that similar criteria with this money to get it out. For example, the Wastewater Infrastructure Fund, which is a state appropriated, and the bonding bill to do subsidized wastewater projects where we match USDA rural development grants at 65-35. And then on the loan program, when the debt service exceeds 5% of market value, we provide a 0% deferred loan, deferred for 20 years, and then payments start in year 21 through 40. We're looking at modifying that in legislation to look at making that a grant instead of a deferred loan, so we can spend the federal funds. Also, rather than just look at property value or market value, is look at median household income. Currently, the drinking water program is 0.4% of median household income. As an affordability criterion, we offer what they call disadvantaged community assistance up to $500,000 for 80% of the cost once that 1.4. So we are looking at doing that similar to wastewater to use half of those wastewater funds.
So what's the local effort then? Is that the 20%? Or you said 80? What's the state kicking in on these things? Or is it just all of this grant money?
Currently, the state appropriates about every
bonding
year between $15 and $30 million for WIF.
And so you have enough to cover.
And this will
to go forward.
Pretty much cover our needs for the current year and probably going into next year. So we wouldn't be. Well, I shouldn't say we won't be coming in for money for WIF next year in the bonding bill, but if we do, it'll be at a reduced level.
So the poor community that did theirs on the loan and 17 weeks ago, they pay it back, and the new ones, it's kind of nice.
Yes, I mean, there's things in here that are not going to make some people happy, those that have proceeded. We've got several. I know, like, New Prague has a very expensive project that they started back in November. If they could have waited till the spring, they would have qualified for a buff. Depending on how much money we give, but a good chunk.
So if you're proactive and you bit the bullet, you'll be paying, and if you lollygagged around, you're going to get some benefits. Okay.
There is a clause that allows us to go back and refinance projects that were funded effective October 1st of 2008. So we may look at some of those options, ease the pain, but that's still not going to do the people good that did it September 30th.
Mr. Chairman, we've scheduled a meeting of the PFA board on the 19th next week. It would be a mistake not to take advantage of these federal funds.
For sure.
But we're also cognizant of that issue of fairness. And so we will be working to be as fair as possible but take advantage of the federal funds.
Well, you can't pass them up. I just was thinking of
we've had the same concern, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, at the same timing. Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Coleman, are these funds allowing us to do more projects than we would have been able to do? Or are we still going down to the number 45 level where the point
yes.
system rates?
Yes, what?
And one more thing. And, okay. We hear a real lot about shovel-ready. And I'm assuming a lot of these are shovel-ready because they've been mandated to do these jobs. So am I right on that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, yes, we are looking to see what the impact is going down further the list We do draw a cutoff, or did draw a cutoff line back in July of 45 points. We'll definitely go down to 40-point projects. We are looking at, we've got several that have plans and specs approved, but they did not bid because they simply can't afford it without a low-interest loan or some grant funding. So if we go down to 38, 36 points, we can pick up a good chunk of those as well. But we are also under, at least get half of this money under contract in 120 days. And there's, so we will be looking at that Thursday too, but we're doing spreadsheets now trying to figure out what the impact of the fund, how much we're going to leverage. We do leverage a lot, so I'm not worried about not having enough projects to spend the money. That's just not the case. We generally leverage, you know, 5 to 10 for every dollar we get. So, you know, if we leverage a little less, but we still want to get as many projects going as possible. There is one other caveat, or besides a lot of requirements built into law, a lot of reporting requirements and different mandates or things that cities are going to have to do and we're going to have to follow up on. 20% of the funds, and that they don't designate grant or loan, need to go into energy conservation activities on water and sewer systems, energy conservation, energy generation, water conservation, and that we can ignore the priority rankings to get projects ready to go. So there's opportunities to look at a variety of things that are eligible under these funds, such as like stormwater treatment and municipal rain gardens, things like that, that have an impact on water quality. But I just don't know if we have anything like that shovel ready in the next 20 days. But we'll 20% of those funds are designated for those uses, so we'll be looking for projects in the area of energy and water conservation.
Right,
that's
any,
all I have. There'll be more.
Yes.
Well, there's a tremendous need out there in Minnesota.
Yes, we got about $2 billion on the list. And just talking to my staff, looking at phone calls we got in the last month on the stimulus conversation, I would say our list probably only reflects about half of the needs out there that cities have. So it's a huge problem.
But the good thing, Mr. Chairman, is that these monies can get to work relatively quickly. There are a lot of the projects, probably both on the clean water and the drinking water side, that where the engineering has been done. The other interesting news is that recent projects are coming in 20 to 30% below engineers' estimates because of the decline in the price of steel and concrete to some extent and because of very competitive bidding circumstances. So the taxpayers and the ratepayers will get a lot of work for their dollar in this environment. Mr. Chairman, if I could, there was a reference earlier to the Buy American Steel provision in the bill. Yeah. It turned out to be the subject of considerable negotiation and was a compromise, and I thought it was very interesting, and I did read the language. And the compromise provides that iron and steel used in construction and repair projects funded under the agreement be produced in the United States unless such a purchase violates obligations under the World Trade Organization agreements. And the hope is that we'll be able to get the vast majority of the steel, U.S. steel, but without triggering retaliation in international markets against Caterpillar and John Deere and others with having, and that's why a strict Buy American for everything provision wasn't put in. It was made narrowly to steel because of the conditions in the steel market. I don't believe it was necessary, but there is also a provision in the bill clarifying that all employees in construction or related contracts are covered by Davis-Bacon under this for projects funded under this bill.
Okay, any further?
Yeah.
Thank you. Very good.
Good report, gentlemen.
I think, are we done?
Oh,
on Wednesday we hear the Green Jobs Task Force. What recommendations? So,
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Bonham.
I thought you mentioned that Lee Nelson was going to speak. But we
well, he can say. You want to come up here, Mr. Nelson? We did touch on that.
So
no, he says no. So
Commissioner McElroy covered it.
I only only mentioned his name in case he was needed for a technical question. I think we covered it.
Thank you.
Is that all right? Yeah. Okay. Meeting's adjourned. Thank you, folks.